scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Happy Friday with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully your Friday and your weekend is set to be strong. Hello, Vix.
Not strong over here with that kind of start. Ooh, that's a flag and a fine.
So, you know, in future, nobody would have known that you didn't turn your mic on, so had you not said anything, nobody would have noticed.
But you would have, and I thought you were going to bury me, so I figured I would beat you to the punch.
No, I would never do that.
Okay. Live and learn.
Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Busy hour coming up for you on Flames Talk, Daily Flames Roundtable. Final Daily Flames Roundtable of the season a little bit later on this hour on the program, but with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And let's go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. And Vix, here we are. And we are a week, more than a week, into the Calgary Flames offseason, and we really haven't talked much about Jonathan Huberdeau as of yet, and what the outlook for Jonathan Huberdeau in the final 7 years of his contract with the final with the Flames look like. Calgary's $10.5 million man coming off a season with 52 points in 81 games. Down from 55 points in 79 games the year before. And Vix, with all the talk going into this season and with all of the, you know, maybe change of coach, change of atmosphere, a little bit more comfort level in Calgary, maybe Huberdeau has a rebound season. Maybe he takes some significant steps forward to being the guy he was as a member of the Florida Panthers. And instead, production-wise, it goes the other way. Now, he was more productive. I'm sure you've got some numbers. He was more productive in kind of the second half of the season compared to his dreadful first half of the season. But in the end, it ends up with 52 points in year two, down from 55 in year one. And as we all know, that was down 60 points from the 115 he had the year before.
Yeah, we're all very aware or familiar with the fact he had the largest season-over-season drop in NHL history, moving from the Florida Panthers to the Calgary Flames in year one. And as you mentioned, year two wasn't any better. In fact, it was slightly worse. Going back to the 2021-22 season, he had 115 points with the Florida Panthers. We all know that NHL record for points by a left wing. He's had 107 points since. That's the 22-23 and 23-24 season combined. So not ideal. Now, there is a bit of a silver lining on that, if that's what we're looking for at this point. The text line will see whether or not they agree or not. But from January 1 onward, he did have 36 points in 45 games. That's a 0.8 point per game clip. That's a 66 point pace over the course of an 82 game season. So if he can find something even just slightly a bit north than that, I don't think anybody in Calgary is ever expecting him to hit 100 points ever again. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's realistic, regardless of what the contract is, regardless that you got 7 years left at 10.5 per, that's out the window. But if you can get a little bit of a bump north from where he managed to go from January 1 onward, I think that is still realistic. And yeah, granted, it's not the point per game player that we were even hoping to see in year two with, as you mentioned, a coaching change, a year of familiarity, a summer of not just being jolted with a life-altering transaction. Point per game, probably not in the cards. But if he can give you something that's right around that 0.85 point per game mark, I think if you're the Calgary Flames, at this point, you take it.
Yeah, and I mean, so 37 points in his last 46 games, doubles the, that was from December 31st on, yeah.
Avoiding that pointless December.
Yeah. But that almost doubled his production. He was about 0.8 points per game, and he was just over 0.4 points per game in the first 35. So he became almost twice as effective, or twice as productive, rather,
yes,
in the calendar year 2024 compared to the calendar year 2023 this year. A little better, but even still, that 65-ish point pace that he would have been on with his second half numbers, still not what you're looking for a guy at $10.5 million. So I guess I asked the question, how can, to your point about him being a point per game guy again, he's now over 30. Like, how concerned are the Flames? How concerned are we on the outside that this is what Huberdeau is? That kind of a guy who flirts with 50 to 70 points a year is what we're talking about. He had 55, then 52. His 2024 pace would have had him at 65 over the course of an 82-game season. None of these numbers scream really loudly at $10.5 million, right? So now that he is entering year three, entering year two of his $84 million contract, like, I think the concern level should be high on all fronts that this is kind of what Huberdeau is going forward. And I don't think that's unfair for anybody to say after two full seasons of evidence.
I think it's a major concern, and one of the biggest challenges Craig Conroy is going to have this offseason and heading into next season about how do you get him. Like, listen, if he gets back to 70, I think you're happy. Park the $10.5 million per. If he can get to 70 and he's somehow factoring in on, you know, 18-ish more goals a season, I'm considering that a win if I'm the organization, because there is a massive difference between where he's trending at right now, and that's just limping over the 50-point line, to being a 70-point player. That's in the realm of a point-per-game pace. If you can get back within that realm, I think you're happy as an organization just knowing that, yeah, he went from 155 to mid-50s to low-50s. And to your point, let's not forget, in the calendar year 2023 of this past season, he, as you alluded to, 16 points in the first 36 games. That was a 36-point pace. There was concern. I remember having talks with you in December amidst that massively terrible December where it's like, he might be sub-40. That is not good. That's probably the best way and the safest way to put it.
None of it is great.
No.
I mean, even 65 points, that's
had a
significant drop from what the Flames were expecting when they brought him in.
But that's still trending upward from year one to year two as it stands right now, even with that very productive, relatively speaking, second half of the season.
More productive second half of the season.
Thank you. He's at least trending the right way, but even still, year over year, he's down. So if you're looking at the point production chart, it's tumbling still. And he needs to find a way to, for lack of a better term, bounce back and start reversing that chart trend. Because at the end of the day, he earned a $10.5 million deal because, and not just from the 115-point season, because he was north of a point per game. He was floating somewhere around 90 or 92 points per 82 games over his 3 years prior to that. But being in the 50s, regardless of the weight of the contract that's got to bear down on a guy, you've got to find a way to be more productive than just a 0.55 point per game kind of player if you're Jonathan Huberdeau.
I mean, these are the two least productive full seasons for Jonathan going back to his third season in the NHL. Which was 2014-15. He had 54 points that year in 79 games. These two seasons are the two least productive years from him since 13-14, when he would have been, 21 years old is what he would have been. So now he turns 31 in June, and he's coming off the two least productive seasons since he was 21. Like, these are not things that necessarily trend positively, but in the interest of fairness and telling both sides of the story, because I think it's very easy for us to just say, well, Jonathan Huberdeau through 2 years, this has been a disaster, and, you know, it has not been very true. It has not gone anywhere close to according to plan. Jonathan would be the first one to say that. However, okay, he was more productive in the back 46 games of the season. He was more productive after the calendar turned from 23 to 24 this year. And then there's this side of it. What about the concept of going out and helping him in the offseason? And what we mean by that is, what about the concept of going out and actually targeting a player or players that the Flames believe will fit better with Jonathan and thus bring more out of Huberdeau on the offensive side of it? And I bring that up not just because it was kicking around my head. I bring it up because the GM brought it up on Friday of last week after locker cleanout day. When he spoke to the media at large, he was asked by he was asked about Jonathan Huberdeau rather, and admitted that, yeah, looking for somebody to play with them is something they absolutely are looking at. This was Craig Conroy last Friday at the Saddle Dome.
The one thing, Jonathan's always working hard. He comes to practice, he works, he goes to the game. I think he almost wants it so bad, you know, when he puts so much pressure on himself, you know, it'd be nice for us to be able to take the pressure off him. But, you know, when you're the highest paid player on the team, that always doesn't happen. But we just want him to come and play the way he did down the stretch. You know, he competes, he back checks, he's working hard. He's trying to do exactly what the structure is, what the game plan is, you know. And I think if he does that, he comes into camp again another year. I'd like to find chemistry. I'd like to get him a player with chemistry. Seems like he has a little bit of chemistry with guys, but that's something I have to try to figure out this summer.
So that was interesting to hear. So what does that look like? How do the Flames go out and affect that and get somebody that has chemistry or could have chemistry with their highest paid player? How do they go about accomplishing that? Well, I mean, there's unrestricted free agency and there's the trade route. Let's explore free agency first. The Flames will have lots of cap flexibility this summer because of the veterans they said goodbye to and traded away throughout the year. So they're going to have cap flexibility. Now, I want to play this from our sit-down with Craig Conroy on Friday as well. This is from our exclusive chat with him, and I asked him about kind of the approach for free agency, specifically about term. Want to make sure we play this too, because it frames the conversation a little bit.
Safe to say in free agency, like, you're probably not looking long-term. You're looking more in the short-term variety as you head into free agency.
That's fair. I would say that's fair. I mean, just where we're at, what we're trying to do, locking in long contracts is, you know, probably doesn't make a lot of sense for us right now. Again, with that said, I'd never want to say never just because right, we're on the radio, but, you know, I would say you're right.
So aside from very rare exclusions, it sounds like short-term deals are what the Flames are looking at. So that probably rules them out of the Jonathan Marchessault or Chandler Stephenson,
Sam Reinhardt
conversations. Now, decent chance that all three of those guys stay where they are. Maybe Vegas isn't able to keep both Stephenson and Marchessault. I don't know. I mean, both guys are going to want to get paid here, but they're going to want to get paid and get long-term deals. Kind of feel like those type of players aren't what the Flames are looking at. So if this whole idea of going to help Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be attacked in free agency, you're probably looking at 1-2-3 year deals as the type of things the Flames are looking at.
Yeah, just given where the Calgary Flames are right now, going long-term into free agency, typically you're either overspending on term or you're overspending on dollars. Well, term handcuffs you a lot more than dollars, especially when you're looking at the Calgary Flames cap situation where they're going to be flirting somewhere around $20 million available this offseason. Does it behoove the Calgary Flames and Craig Conroy to spend right up to the cap and use that sort of asset management in terms of just exploding on the free agent market and grabbing whatever you can? No, because the Calgary Flames have a set defined plan for this retool, as it's sort of been dubbed. But with that, you can still go out and look around, and if you have to overspend on actual dollars for a shorter term to experiment a little bit, that's a route that I'd be okay going. Now, to circle back to Jonathan Huberdeau, maybe there's a guy out there that you build a player profile for, that you look at Jonathan Huberdeau's game, you look at the players he's been successful with in the past, and if you can't get a specific player that he had chemistry with, you build out a model saying, okay, well, what did that player have? He had attribute A, B, and C. So then you go to market and you look at, okay, what player sort of profiles the same way. And if you have to pay a little bit extra to bring that player in on a shorter term and do this with the thought in mind of jumpstarting or finding chemistry with Jonathan Huberdeau, that's the way to go about it in my books, as opposed to splashing a long-term deal on someone and then ending up in perhaps a similar situation.
Well, and I think it's, you know, the first name that comes to mind without question and has been brought up numerous times over the last year is Anthony Duclair of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Pending unrestricted free agent.
And is not going to be a guy that I think is going to... He's not going to command a long-term deal in free agency. What I do think Duclair is going to have is suitors, but on short-term deals. He has, for instance, 15 points in 17 games since joining the Tampa Bay Lightning before the trade deadline, 2 points in 3 playoff games. Lightning trail the Florida Panthers 3-0. I think Duclair is going to have interest. I think that there will be teams offering him 1- and 2-year deals. Here's where Calgary's flexibility can help them a little bit. Because they're going to have cap flexibility, maybe they can offer Duclair $500,000 more over a 2-year deal on a 2-year deal on an AAV that other teams might. Or maybe they can offer him an extra year that other teams aren't offering him. And because Calgary's got that cap flexibility, their ability to attract a player who's probably going to be getting short-term bites, 1-2 year bites on the free agent market, that might help them out. And I'd have no problem if they were to quote-unquote overpay or overterm on a guy like Duclair with the express intent or partial attempt to help that get a guy going like Jonathan Huberdeau, who we know has played with Duclair before. So that's the first guy that comes to mind when having the conversation about a potential free agent. I never felt like trading an asset for him this season made sense, but as he enters free agency, maybe that's an area where the Flames can use their flexibility to their advantage compared to other teams who are going to be tighter against the cap.
And Duclair's an interesting case because he might be a player that, depending on what offers do come in, is okay with the shorter term. Because while he had 15 points in 17 games at the tail end of the season with Tampa Bay, he only had 27 and 56 with the San Jose Sharks. Now, say what you want about the San Jose Sharks. They weren't a competitive team, but maybe there's a situation where Duclair, who's age 28, goes, I wonder if I get a short-term deal in an environment where I know I can play top 6 minutes with productive players, where I can juice up what my next contract is going to be at age 29, age 30, age 31, and put myself in a better position to earn a longer-term deal with a higher cap hit. And that's the type of player that Calgary can have the luxury of going out to and saying, hey, we can put you in a primetime spot here. We've got positions that'll be open. We're obviously auditioning players to play with Jonathan Huberdeau to see if we can reignite him. And Anthony Duclair, you're a guy who knows exactly what Jonathan Huberdeau looks like when he's on. Is this a situation where you would be interested coming here on a short-term deal? And then we'll try to do right by you at some point by either trading you to a contender or just juicing up what your next contract might be. Now, if Anthony Duclair ends up with better offers with longer term, and I don't even want to say more money, because I think that's something the Calgary Flames actually have to play with in terms of their cap space
they
and
also
our
have
ability
term
to overspend
to play with in a situation like this.
They do.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if I'd want to tie up both at the same time in a player.
I would want to maintain that
flexibility.
I'm only talking about if he's getting 1- and 2-year bites. Well, maybe
three.
The Flames go 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting six. No.
Okay.
I'm just suggesting they can go a little. They can one up other teams in that area, and they can dangle the Huberdeau carrot.
Right.
They can, as you said, they can dangle him playing in a top six role and getting opportunity and say, hey, we're a team that can give you a little bit more on the AAV. We're a team that can give you an extra year compared to team X, Y, and Z that you also have offers for. Maybe that doesn't do it. Maybe that's not enough, but at the very least, it gives you that option and it gives you a little bit of a competitive advantage once you get into unrestricted free agency. And look, here's what needs to be remembered. As it stands right now, Huberdeau's not going anywhere. And retooling or not, Huberdeau's a part of this thing. So it's in Calgary's best interest to try to see if they can get more out of him for two reasons. If he's here for the long term, well, you'd much rather him be a more productive version of himself than what we've seen the first 2 years. Or if trading him is something you'd like to do, wouldn't you rather make it so that his value's a little bit higher? And so at some point down the road in a year or two, if a trade becomes part of a conversation, it's not as detrimental to an organization moving that type of contract out. I mean, it makes nothing but sense, even as they undergo this retooling process, to try to maximize or better maximize what Jonathan Huberdeau is on the ice.
Listen, it's no secret every team wants to maximize the situation that their player's in, try to give them the best tools to work with, try to put them in the best opportunities and places to succeed. This is just amplified tenfold with Jonathan Huberdeau because of the player he's been in the past, the player he's been over the past two seasons, the fact that you owe him $84 million less the $10.5 million you've already spent on him this past season. He is the most important player on your roster to find a way to jumpstart or take up another level. It's just simply because of the terms, the term on his contract, the dollars that you're paying him, the situation that you need him to be able to perform to the somewhat of the level that he has in the past. He is project number one in my book for the Calgary Flames. And that falls on Craig Conroy to listen. It hasn't worked with pretty much everybody on the Calgary Flames roster to date. So now when you go out to free agency, you got to keep in mind Jonathan Huberdeau and potentially finding someone he meshes
with. And maybe there's a trade that works as well in that respect. And, you know, maybe one of those market inefficiencies that the Flames have been able to cash in on here over the last year or so. And then the only caveat to it, because you're right, for the most part, everyone they've tried hasn't been a checkmark fit, except Connor Zary, and that's only seven games of sample size, but I'll steal Wes Gilbertson, the other Flames Talk fan member. The way that he phrased it on Twitter near the end of the season was, it's not insignificant that we're seeing Zary and Huberdeau have some chemistry on the ice. I don't know what it means long term. I don't know if it's only a short burst, but I do think that's important. With Zary in the middle and Huberdeau on his left side, they look pretty good together in those final seven games of the season. So that is in my head as well going into next year. Maybe that's also something that you have in mind and you're looking for that right fit on the right side for Jonathan and Zary.
The other place where I think I've seen some chemistry with Huberdeau is actually Kuzmenko, but on the power play when both of those guys are operating below the goal line. And listen, I don't care where Jonathan Huberdeau gets his points, whether it's at five on five or whether it's on the power play. Bottom line, he needs to produce. And 16 of his 36 points in 2024 were on the power play. I don't care where he gets them. He just needs to get them. So if you can find situations and pockets, whether it's Connor Zary down the middle, and as you mentioned, seven games, not a big sample size, seven games down the stretch when there's nothing on the line, but the fact that there was something there is a plus. The fact that there was something there with Kuzmenko when both of them are operating down low in the power play, that's something. But you need more than just something to jumpstart Jonathan Huberdeau because he's, for lack of a better term, he's their most important player right now just because of the term and the salary.
Just based on the contract, yeah. Text line, 960-960. This reads, what a depressing conversation. Not only are they massively overpaying for Huberdeau, but now got to go find a player in free agency and spend more to try to get him going. Brenton Langdon writes, not sure what the puck turnovers are for him, but most games I stop counting. Flames need to take their lumps and get rid of Huberdeau now. There's a reason Florida offered him. They didn't want him either. Pay out the dollars or trade him now. I mean, I don't think that is a realistic possibility because you'd be looking at 12 years on a buyout and you'd be needing to incentivize a trade fairly heavily. I just don't think that makes sense. I do believe the best option is see if you can get more out of Jonathan going forward. See if what you saw from him in the back 4 months of the season is something that can be built upon going into training camp. A buyout or a trade, I just don't think right now either of them make a whole lot of sense. This says, Jonathan played with almost every player on the Flames over 2 years. Does that mean none of the players on the Flames are good enough? That's why they have to look elsewhere. I think the Flames have players like Duclair or better than him. I just think it's worth a try because there's evidence that there's a guy that has had success with him before. And even if it doesn't work on Huberdeau, the idea of going to get a guy like Duclair makes sense as well. He'd be a nice guy to plug in over a 1-2-3 year span on your forward group as well. So I don't really think there's a downside. Duclair is just the one that always gets brought up because he was one of Jonathan's constant line mates 2 seasons ago.
And is available. And as is available. You mentioned, yeah, he was exactly. Either available in a trade for San Jose if he didn't want to expel an asset. He's available as a free agent for no cost other than dollars in term. So that's why he gets brought up quite a bit.
This reads, why keep Huberdeau? Trade him for anything you can get. Cut your losses. Again, I just don't think it's that easy the way things are right now.
Just to put it into context, it cost the Flames a first-round pick to move $6 million of Sean Monahan to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. This is $10.5 million with 6 years left. That was 1 year at 6.5 or whatever it was. This says, I'm starting to get annoyed with the excuse that you're getting traded to a city that's not Florida or LA. These guys spend less than 100 days in the city, and during the offseason, they do whatever the hell they want. I agree. Like, I don't think that the change of scenery is an excuse anymore. Maybe season one, with the shock of the trade, less about not being in Florida and being in Calgary, just more about not expecting to be traded from a place that you felt was home and you wanted to sign long-term with. The shock of that is, I think, was a little bit more of a valid talking point for me coming out of last season as opposed to coming out of this season.
Yeah, for me, I think Jonathan Huberdeau was expecting to be a member of the Florida Panthers for life. And so when you pick up your phone and on the other end is your GM saying that you've just been dealt to Calgary without any sort of rumbling, any sort of rumor, without any sort of inclination that it's happening, it's a life-altering transaction for Jonathan Huberdeau. Some players grasp it and run with it right away. Other players need time to digest. Huberdeau needed time to digest. But yeah, it's no longer valid as an excuse when you're in year two heading into year three.
Randy and Cochran says, in chasing someone to play with Huberdeau, very high probability it doesn't work. He is what he is now. Ride it out until you can reasonably buy him out. This says, is there a correlation between the time of Huberdeau's point increase and the time the Flames were effectively out of the playoffs? Actually, I would say no. I actually felt like it through January and February is when it was maybe the most effective. And that was probably that January, February, the Flames were still reasonably in contention and games still had meaning in terms of the playoffs. Even after the Lindholm trade, that was still a thing. You know, things didn't really fall off the face of the earth until about a week after the trade deadline in mid-March. So it was only the last month of the season that was kind of just like playing out the string. Right. Most of the second half of the season, they were still somewhat in the conversation for the playoffs. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you this hour on Flames Talk. That's your look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local Calgary. From best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in store today.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time for our final Daily Flames roundtable of the season, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. Final official Daily Flames roundtable of the season. But if stuff happens, we got lots of time to chat with Derek Wills throughout the summer. Derek, the voice of the Flames, joins us at Steinberg, and Aaron Vickers along with you on this Daily Flames roundtable. So final one like this, but lots of time to chat with Derek as the summer goes along, and lots of news that we're expecting this summer, gentlemen. And that's kind of how we will wrap up our Daily Flames roundtables for the season. I'm taking a look ahead to the summer, and as the offseason is just over a week underway, what the rest of it might hold for the Flames. Outside of goaltending, which we kicked around on Wednesday's program, what's the top story you've got your eye on here, gents? What is the number one thing that you'll be tracking, or the number one thing that you're eager to find out a resolution on as the Flames enter another important offseason here?
Yeah, goaltending is number one for me, Pat. And that goes beyond Jacob Markstrom. If they move him, it's going to be Dustin Wolf and who? I think that's the question. But number two, and what I'll hit on today, is what does Craig Conroy do with all the draft picks he's accumulated? So he's got 9 picks in the 2024 draft, including 2 first rounders, 2 second rounders, 2 third rounders, and 2 fourth rounders. And he's got 24 picks, including 5 first rounders in the next 3 years. So focusing on this summer's draft, does he draft 9 players, or does he flip some of those picks for actual players? And when I say actual players, I'm talking about guys who have played pro hockey, who have either played in the NHL or are ready to play in the NHL, guys who can contribute sooner rather than later. Because, you know, if the Flames are going to be competitive next season, or a year from now, or 2 years from now, or 3 years from now, I don't think they can take the 24 picks they have in the next 3 drafts, draft players, spend time developing them, and then be competitive within a 3-year window. So in order for them to get to where they want to go faster than that, then I think they have to probably flip some of the picks they have to bring in actual NHL players. So for me, that's number one. What does he do with all these draft picks that he's got?
And Vix, just before you jump in with yours, let's instead of, you know, kind of just throwing out a dip, let's respond to that. Let's talk about that one first, because it's true. I mean, if they want to bring in a couple of players that could help them right away, and I think there's going to be conflicting opinions on that on the text line, for instance, as to whether they should or whether they shouldn't. But when you build up some good draft capital, it gives you that opportunity, right?
There's that. Yep. There's the volume that the Calgary Flames have. The other element to consider in terms of moving draft pick for a prospect or a player that's already ready to contribute into your lineup is a draft pick is never more valuable in any given year than when everybody's assembled and you're on the draft floor. So there's an opportunity for Craig Conroy to, when he gets a second or a third round pick in a deal, whether it was in December or January or March at the deadline, that pick is a second round pick, or that pick is a third round pick. But when you get onto the draft floor, that pick is number 37, or that pick is number 55. And you've got teams, particularly rebuilding teams, but you have teams in general, maybe there's going to be a cap squeeze for one of them, or another team wants to free up space, where suddenly that pick has a definitive number where it's going, and it's never more valuable than when you're about to use it. Teams want capital at the draft, and if they're able to go to the Calgary Flames and call Craig Conroy and say, hey, what would it take for you to move that third round pick? Or, hey, we're really interested in that second round pick, because they can, now the other team can identify a player with that pick. Now there's an emotional attachment, because we could get player X with that pick, or we're going to trade because we know one of four guys.
We have our eye on one of these guys right now.
It's not just pick number 55. It is player X that they're hoping to pick with that. So now you can maximize what that pick is worth and bring in an asset that's going to help expedite what you consider to be a retool.
The only thing that I don't want to see is they've got this option with, I really think it's important for them to hold on to their first round pick this year. The one that is going to be 9th overall, most likely, 5% chance that it could move up to number 1 overall. What a 5.2% chance that it could move to number 2 overall. The draft lottery, by the way, we know will be May 7th. So that is a week from this Tuesday is when the NHL will determine the draft order. And the Flames have got a 95-ish% chance of finishing number 9 overall. But yeah, I don't think that you're getting necessarily a foundational player by using some of your assets. And because of that, I think the Flames still need to have that as their number one focus. And while you're right, Wilsey, like if they just go and used all nine of their picks, those guys probably aren't going to be contributing. And if they get 3 players that turn into NHLers, those players aren't all going to be contributing a year or two from now. But that's so important for them, in my eyes, to find in the next 2-3 drafts one of those cornerstone foundational players. They need a number one center going forward. And that's no disrespect to the year Nazem Kadri just had, but Nazem's going to be 34 next season. And they need a number one defenseman. And so they need to find their versions of Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. I use Vancouver as an example because they're... Because I think McDavid's a silly example because those guys don't come along very often. But they need to find their version of their number one center and their number one defenseman. And I just, it is so much more probable that you'll do that by using your first round picks as opposed to trading your first round picks. So that's kind of the big thing for me, Wilsey.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not trading away that ninth overall pick or probable ninth overall pick. I would potentially like to trade up, but trading up in the top 10 is next to impossible.
Yeah.
Would I trade down? Maybe. I mean, watching the NFL draft last night, the first round, the way it all kind of played out, it was really interesting because it was the latest in NFL history a defensive player had been drafted. I think the first, 13 or 14 picks were all offensive players. So I'm guessing that changed the board for everybody. You know, six quarterbacks were off the board, I believe, in the top 12 picks of the draft, which is bonkers. So maybe something weird happens at the NHL draft this summer and you feel like you're in a position to trade down and acquire even more assets. I think it's more likely that a team would trade down than trade up into the top 10. It's so hard to do that and it hardly ever happens. But I think about when Brad Treleving, I believe he traded back twice the year he took Connor Zary in the first round, didn't he?
Correct. Yep.
So, I mean, you get a really good player in Connor Zary, and you got two additional assets in order to trade back a couple of times. So that's possible. If they traded their later first-round pick to bring in someone who was in their late teens or early to mid-20s, who's already established at the NHL level and kind of fits their window, I wouldn't mind them doing that. What we've learned with this Flames team over the years, because I think the scouts have done a great job identifying talent late in drafts, is that you don't want to throw away some of those late round picks. Maybe you get a Dustin Wolf in the seventh round or an Andrew Mangiapane in the sixth round. You just never know. So those picks, even though the probability, I would say, of them becoming NHLers is less than if you take a guy in the first or second or third round, you know, the chance is still there. And as you know, Treleving used to say, the more lottery tickets you have, the better your chances are to win the lottery. So they've got lots of lottery tickets in 2024, nine of them, including two good ones with those first round picks. They've got 24 of them over the next 3 years. But again, if the goal is to be good, to be competitive, when you move into the new building, I don't think you can just draft 24 players over the next 3 years and expect to draft them, develop them, and then graduate them from whether it be college or junior or Europe, potentially to the ECHL and then the AHL and the NHL. I just don't think that timeline works out well for the Flames. So I wouldn't mind them potentially moving some picks to bring in, this might not be the best example, but a Yegor Sharangovich type, a guy who is in the right kind of age range, who has proven he can play at the NHL level, has maybe been underutilized with another team. And Aaron, to your point, maybe a team's in a cap crunch and feels like they have to move someone in that window, even though they don't want to. So it's good to have all these assets that Craig Conroy has accumulated, that's for sure.
One of the blueprints for me, Wilsey, along that thought process is Sean Durzi and what the Arizona Coyotes were able to squeeze out of the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for a second-round pick. If there's a younger player, and I think Durzi was 24 at the time, if there's a younger player that you can identify that's available for one of those second- or third-round picks that you know is going to make an impact in your top four, then by all means, have at it.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek, Aaron, Pat. Vix, what's your number one story that you're watching this summer?
Well, I mean, it's similar. It's along the same lines, and Wilsey referenced that ninth overall pick, and we're going to just pretend that the Calgary Flames don't win the lottery. Nobody behind them jumps ahead.
No, let's pretend they do win the lottery.
Downer.
Well, but then we're done. Like, okay, so they draft Macklin Celebrini, and the intrigue is over, but hypothetically, nothing changes in terms of their draft position. They're at number nine. What does their list look like? What's come off the board in front of them? And then specifically on a topic that we talked about on Flames Talk on Thursday is whether or not TJ Ginla is available and whether or not he's at the top of your list. and whether or not he becomes the next member of the Calgary Flames. And we got into it significantly on Flames Talk on Thursday. If you haven't heard, I suggest you go back and listen to it wherever you get your podcasts. But that is one of the most intriguing first-round picks the Calgary Flames have had in ages, just simply because of the storyline around drafting the best player in franchise history's son.
Willie?
Yeah, I mean, that's super interesting. And think about what a shot in the arm that would be for this franchise and for this fan base. And there would be a ton of pressure on Teague if he had to try to follow in his father's footsteps. But I feel like he's almost been groomed to do that, whether it be with the Flames, which would be obviously different than any other NHL team or one of the other 31 teams. But, you know, he's grown up in this world. So I feel like if anybody's in a position to handle the pressure that would come with being Jerome McGinley's son in Calgary, it would probably be his son, Teague. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But yeah, what they do with that ninth overall pick, assuming that they don't win the draft lottery. And let's be honest, the Flames probably deserve a little bit of luck. I mean, the Oilers, they've had four first overall picks since, what is it, 2010? It's ridiculous. The Flames have never picked higher than fourth overall when they took Sam Bennett back in 2015. So they could use a little bit of luck in the lottery. But Aaron, you're way more up on what's going on with the NHL draft and with prospects than I am. I'm by no means an expert on the NHL draft. But, you know, based on some of the things I've heard and read, it sounds like seven of the top 10 players could be defensemen. Is that kind of bang on? Or?
Yeah, it's once you get past Macklin Celebrini and perhaps Ivan Demidov, it's a very sort of defensive heavy balance in the top 10. So it wouldn't be a surprise or a shock if there was a run of defensemen early. But to be perfectly honest, there is probably 13 or 14 or 15 players that I wouldn't suggest are a lock for the top 10, but there's a lot of depth in this draft in terms of players that might end up in that top 10 range.
So in a way, it kind of feels like a no-lose situation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The Flames just traded three of their top five defensemen in Nikita Zadorov and then Chris Tanev and then Noah Hanifin. So I'm sure that Craig Conroy would love to add a defenseman in the top 10. But if TJ Ginla is there, I feel like that would be hard to pass up on.
Wilsey, you touched on something. I want to pose you this question. Who is there more pressure on, Teague if the Flames draft him, or the player that the Flames draft if Teague was still on the board, knowing how rabid his fan base is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer.
And I mean, look, I mean, as I said on Wednesday or Thursday, if he's there, I'm just like, I don't care if he's not the top player on your list. Take him anyway, just because, just selfishly for the story, but also, like, can you imagine the reaction if they're up at number nine and Teague Ginla is still on the board and they pick somebody? Like the text line would crash. My Twitter, our Twitters would explode. Like, just do it. Save yourself the hassle and do it is what I say. I can say that a whole lot easier than the Flames can.
Yeah, and you know what, like, it's such an unbelievable story if it happens. And if I was in Craig Conroy's shoes, and listen, he knows way more about the game than I ever will. And you know, he's got a bunch of scouts who I could say the same about. But, and again, easier said than done. But let's say they've got Teague on their board at number seven, and he's available at number nine. And the guy who they have at number six on their board is also available. Would I take slightly Teague. Overpay to take Teague?
Yep, all day.
Absolutely, I would. Yeah.
Again.
I stay true to the list, though, but I'm no fun.
Easier.
Yeah, but if it's your number two guy versus your number seven guy, or your number six guy versus your number seven guy, for me, that's a different story.
No, I get that.
Easier for us to say on the outside they should do that than internally. But I think the easiest, just win the draft lottery and then you don't have to worry about it.
That's so true.
Conroy, go win the draft lottery on May 7th and then everything's taken care of.
It's not like he's taking a penalty shot, Pat.
No, I think go win the draft lottery. That's what I say. I'll just add one quickly. And we spent a good chunk of time in the first half of the hour talking about it. But guys, outside of goaltending, I am really interested. The fact that Craig Conroy, kind of unsolicited, when asked about Jonathan Huberdeau, talked about going out and finding somebody to have some chemistry with Jonathan next season. That's really interesting to me. And what what that looks like. You know, we talked a little bit about Duclair and maybe giving him one more year than another team could in free agency, or $500,000 or $700,000 more than another team could in any in free agency, just because they'll have that type of flexibility. Maybe it's something like that. Maybe it's one of the trades that you discussed, Wilsey, and there's a guy that they've identified that they think could be a really good fit. I don't know exactly what it looks like. I just am really curious when Craig Conroy says, we want to go out and find somebody that has chemistry with Huberdeau. What does that look like, and what are your chances of actually being successful if that's something that you end up doing?
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Duclair would be a nice addition, even if you take Jonathan Huberdeau out of the equation. But when you factor in how much success they had playing with the Panthers together a couple of seasons ago, makes a lot of sense. And I do think it's a worthwhile investment. You've got Jonathan Huberdeau signed for another 7 seasons at 10.5 per. So if you have to overspend a little bit to bring in someone to get him going, I think you absolutely do that if you're Craig Conroy. And Anthony Duclair would be a nice add. He's got size, he's got speed, he's got skill. He's a good player. The other one for me, guys, and this isn't a big one like it was last summer, but you know, right now the Flames have 3 pending unrestricted free agents. One big one, I would say, a guy who should be top 4 on defense for them, who I do think we'll come back in Oliver Shillington. You've also got A.J. Greer and Dennis Gilbert. With all due respect to them, I wouldn't say you can take them or leave them. I'd like both guys to come back, but if they don't, I don't think it's disastrous for the Flames, but you'd certainly like to bring Shillington back. But you know, how refreshing is it that unlike last offseason, you don't have these big-name pending UFAs hanging over the team like a black cloud? And I actually think it impacted the team negatively this season because we were all just waiting for the next domino to fall. And might have had an impact on how those guys performed. I would certainly suggest that it did with at least Elias Lindholm, if not others. So at least he doesn't have to worry about that stuff this summer and hiring a new coach and some other things that he had to worry about as soon as he became the general manager of this team.
Have a good summer, Wilsey. And again, we'll hear from you throughout the summer, but, because it is our final Daily Flames roundtable of the season, have a wonderful summer, my friend. And, we'll talk to you soon. Hey.
Yeah. It's hard to believe this is the last one. I guess I have to flip the switch and, start focusing on golf now, but, pleasure chatting with you guys all season long. And, thanks to our listeners, for tuning in and our sponsors and, yeah, looking forward to the next conversation we have, because that probably means something has happened significant with the Flames, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, that probably would be something significant happening with the Flames if we're calling you sometime soon. Well, I'm sure it'll be tough for you to enjoy golfing, so suck it up and really try to get into your golf game this summer, okay?
All right, sounds good. And hopefully we start getting some golf weather. That would help. But have a great summer, everybody.
Thank you, Wilsey. Derek Wills signing off on the Daily Flames Roundtable for the final time this year. Vickers and Steinberg along with you. And I want to say a special thanks all season long to our outstanding sponsor on the Daily Flames Roundtable at Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Thanks for being with us all year long. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our producers this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. And for the final time, the Daily Flames Roundtable has been brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.